That Great Business Show. Winner, highly commended award, Irish Podcast Awards.
Welcome to episode 188 of That Great Business Show, home of great business tips, insights and opportunities on every episode delivered in our commute-friendly package or on board Aer Lingus Long Haul, where we are their podcast partners. Unlock the full potential of your business with Mentors Work, Ireland's award-winning, fully government-funded mentoring program designed to fuel the growth of your business, no matter the sector or size. Mentors Work will help transform your business by providing tailored guidance through one-on-one mentoring sessions, upskilling workshops, as well as networking opportunities. Together with your mentor, you'll also craft a customized six-month business plan to propel your business forward. Try it and test it, and already empowering over 3,000 Irish businesses, register for free today on mentorswork.ie. I'm Conal O'Mora and Fáilte Stiach. On this episode, a national newspaper boss tells us how he and his rivals intend on staying relevant and in business. And it's called Industry 4.0. No, we hadn't either, but it's all about smart factories, and we'll be asking some basic questions as we do.
De facto, the revolutionary shaving oil, changing the face of shaving. For the smoothest shave of your life, just add water. No more lathering up or cleaning up afterward. Just add a few drops of water and you're ready to go. De facto's blend of all natural oils hydrates and protects your skin. No more razor burns or irritation. A spa treatment for your face. Perfect for all skin types and lasts so much longer than traditional foams or gels. De facto, a shaving revolution. Just add water. Available from selected pharmacies and from defactoshave.com.
I can claim that my first guest knows business, having started out in various roles with Diageo, ending up as finance director for the Gilby's brands. He moved to the Choice Hotel Group, then on to the Mercantile Pubs Group, then on to Kilcullen Capital, that's Enda O'Kinnion's investment group, emerging as CEO of what was the Sunday Business Post, now the Business Post, and since the end of 2022, he has been COO of the wider Business Post Group. So, some CV. But that's not all. He is also chairperson of News Brands Ireland, that represents Irish publishers' interests on issues of public policy with government and public policymakers. And unless you have been living under a rock, you will know that all newspapers are having a torrid time. So, what is the future? Colm O'Reilly, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Some people say great intro, but how can you say great intro when I've just said torrid time, the future? It's a rough time. How do you get out of bed in the morning?
It is the most dynamic industry I've probably ever been at. And I've been lucky enough, Conal, to have been in some really interesting industries, being the drinks industry, hospitality, private equity investments. Journalism, which is the core of the product, is just cutting edge, exciting stuff. At any point in time, my phone will go, email will go, something is breaking, something is happening. You're a man yourself who knows this space well. It got into my blood very, very quickly. The industry, look, it has been challenged, no doubt about it. You know, since the internet came along, we've gone from print onto digital. We've seen the emergence of big tech. It has been extremely challenging. But the one thing that is always important to remember is that more people are consuming news now than ever have done at any point in the past. The number of apps that are out there, people are scrolling on their phones, constantly getting news. So the product is there, the audience is there, the delivery mechanism and the cost of getting to the audience is the challenge.
And that is called, in this case, a newspaper. Newspapers, I would wish them only the best, but their days are numbered. In fact, your own rival, the Independent Group, have already said so. Media House, as they are also known. They are not intending. They've said they're digital only in 10 years or maybe earlier.
That's right. They have said that. And, you know, my own view of that is slightly different. You know, certainly, look, the facts are the facts. The business has been, the business of selling newspapers, hard printed newspapers, is in serious sustainable decline. has been for at least 10 years. And you're probably looking now at any point in time, we're down about 50% in terms of the number of newspapers that are bought on any given day. That said, on any given month on the island of Ireland, 8 million newspapers will be sold, right? So that's still a sizable market. Digital, a lot of people say digital is the future. It's not, it's the present. And, every publisher that you talk to will say to you, it's digital first. That's the mindset that we have to put in place. Personally, and I probably represent a certain age group and a cohort.
Same here.
I love the look, the feel, the intimacy of a newspaper, and there's nothing more. I was one of those people who was a news junkie, 3 newspapers on a Sunday. I still do it, still love it, still love the texture of turning the pages, but it's not for everybody. And as we look to, bring in new audiences and make reading the news part of their repertoire, digital is the way it will go.
And both you and I wish print only the best, but it is, and please say these words, it is over.
I won't say it's over, because my view is different, as I said. My view is it's a bit like vinyl, I think. I think we're going to be in a situation where it will continue to decline, but I do think it will reach a bottom. It will be a niche product. It will be more expensive. It will require publishers and the print houses to be able to come together with the logistics partners and retail to ensure that we're able to still provide that product. But you also have to think about, that there are certain audiences that will demand it, particularly older audiences, particularly more rural areas. Now, I know the rollout of broadband has changed people's ability to use smartphones, particularly outside of urban areas. But there's still some of those challenges, My mother, who was with us up to last year, was getting her Irish Independent every single day, walked to the shops and got it. She would never use a smartphone. So we still have to be conscious of the audience that we serve and ensure that we still provide that product as long as it's commercially viable to do so.
So we'll get on to news brands in a second, but just the Post, the Business Post, because it's no longer the Sunday Business Post, it's the Everyday Business Post.
It is.
What are you thinking of? What's the strategy there?
So when we acquired the Business Post in Endo, Quinny and myself did that in the second part of 2018, we understood that the industry was being disrupted. Technology was massively disrupting the traditional print industry.
Let me disrupt you there. Did you think it was going to be as bad, as severe and as quick as it has been?
It has been more challenging, I think is probably fair to say.
That is a no, I think.
It's been more challenging. Actually, I did look at the original investment case recently, and yeah, the decline has been quicker than we would have anticipated. It has been absolutely more challenging. And probably the big curveball has been, the role of big tech. And I mean, when we bought the business, TikTok didn't exist. That's how quickly things are changing. But when we were looking at the model, We understood very clearly that we had to have a different model, the traditional model, particularly as a small niche player like the Business Post is. So we had looked across the world for best practice, and it was in Scandinavia where we actually thought we found the model that we could replicate within the Irish market. And I think sometimes the problem for Irish companies is that they look to the UK, they look to the US because they're English-speaking markets, but we are a small country of 5 million consumers, and that poses challenges for virtually every business. So for us, it was about expanding the revenue streams. We've gone into events very heavily. We've made a number of acquisitions in that space over the years. We acquired Red Sea Research, and we've been looking into data and data insights. And we're also looking at opportunities in other areas like learning and development. So we think by harnessing these things around the core Business Post audience, people who have got a keen interest in business and politics, and by having complementary revenue streams, we will be able to supplement our journalism and supplement the great content the Business Post produces on any given day.
And go back to Red Sea, because when you bought that, I was wondering, where did that fit in? I'm very familiar with YouGov in the UK, which actually did start off rather small. It is now rocking. Do you see an international role for Red Sea, or is it just going to be an add-on as it is to Business Post?
Well, firstly, part of our journey has been to really reposition ourselves as an insights group. The Business Post and iQuest, our events business, will give companies insights into their industry, into the laws around it, and how that industry works, competitors, etc. Red Sea gives you insights into your consumers and into your clients, and that's what they do through their research. And every single publisher today, every single modern media business, whether they're in radio, TV, or publishers like ourselves, first-party data is absolutely crucial. And Red Sea is a way for us to be able to glean those insights. I think absolutely. I think you've hit the nail on the head. I think there's huge international opportunities for us with Red Sea. And, you know, last July, Bonnier News of Sweden became minority investments or minority equity participants in the Business Post Group. And, you know, we're working with them to see how we potentially could look at Red Sea across their portfolio businesses.
Why minority? When I saw that as well, I said, strange. I would have thought that would have come in and taken 51%+.
We're not finished on our journey. And, you know, what we were looking for was a strategic business, or when you're raising capital to do acquisitions, which is what we were looking to do. And that's how we've grown the group over the last number of years, is via acquisition. When you're looking for a capital partner, you've really got two choices. A financial investor who will be very hard in terms of returns. It's very clear. They will give you the money. But the expectation is, of course, is a return on investment and an IRR. Or you can choose a strategic partner. And we wanted to go the strategic partner route. We wanted to work with somebody who understood the ups and downs that come with media, because it is a game that is ups and downs.
And not everybody will be familiar with Bonnier. Is there Bonnier or Bonnier?
Bonnier.
Bonnier. How would you define Bonnier? How would you describe them to somebody who doesn't know them?
So they're a 200-year-old family-owned business from Sweden, started off in bookbinding and book publishing, and have progressed from there into a number of different areas in so far as real estate, private investment, and then publishing is their big, big piece. So they've been the single biggest news publisher across Scandinavia. In their home market of Sweden, they'd be the dominant publisher, but they're also a huge interest across Norway, Denmark, and Finland. So within the greater context of Europe, you look at the big media groups, you know, News Corp within the UK, Bonnier in Scandinavia, Media House in Holland and Belgium, Handelsblad in Germany. You can see what's happening as a group sort of merging. And by bringing Bonnier into Ireland, we felt it gave us the opportunity to really use their deep knowledge around digital publishing. It would help us kickstart and really accelerate what we're doing in that space. But also as a small market, you know, it allowed us to sort of have a partner, allow them to understand an English-speaking market, because this is the first time they've invested in an English-speaking market. And we'll see where we go.
And one of the other things that you've done recently is that you have, I won't say expanded in, but you have placed your people into the UK, into the EU, and you have already had for a long time Marion McKeown over in the US. Again, you've got your, in my head, we're serving the Irish business market. The business has been taken out of the name. You're becoming a general publisher.
Oh, I wouldn't say so. You know, one of the things, for example, we don't do is sport, right?
Well, and there is a creeping sport into it now.
It's really sport from the perspective of the business of sport as against the results on a Saturday and the match reports. Because the business of sport is really interesting at the moment, particularly with when you see some of the big players that are now investing in sport and looking for a return on investment. So that's the kind of angle we're looking at. Look, we're all about business and politics, and really by establishing an office in London and an office in Brussels and with Marion in the US. We're cognizant of our role. This tiny island that we talk about, you know, on the edge of Western Europe, we play a huge role within international affairs, particularly on business side. You just look at the number of multinationals have got their EMEA headquarters based in Ireland. So we're cognizant of, you know, there's a demand from Irish readers to understand what is happening in these countries. But we also particularly want to concentrate on how Ireland is perceived in those markets and what's happening there that we need to know about from an Irish perspective. So that's how we're looking at kind of expanding our offer. And, you know, the readers of the Business Post are the types of people who will also be reading the FT, the Guardian, the New York Times, the Irish Times. They are looking for a world angle, and that's something we're determined to bring to them.
Have you mentioned the FT very quickly there. Is this research or is that just your there's a term used in publishing, the pinch feel. Is that your pinch feel about your readers? Or do you actually know that they are FT readers?
We do, and that's because we have a research company called Red Sea who's done
that's
some research
done for us.
Yeah, we have done some research on this. And that when we've spoken to our readers and when we've surveyed them, this is the type of other publications that they're subscribing to or that they're buying on a regular basis.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years out, what are you thinking? What will you see? Will the paper, the actual physical paper exist?
I think the physical paper will exist. I think it will exist in a much smaller format than it exists today. But I, as
By
I said
that,
earlier,
do you mean physically? Is it going to go tabloid?
I don't know if it will.
You've got rid of two magazines.
Yes.
And like, it is getting smaller.
It is getting smaller. And, you know, and really what we're trying to do is we're trying to, for subscribers, we now have the opportunity for subscribers to get the printed product delivered to home. So they're getting the full range of what we're doing on a daily basis, plus the weekend print edition. So the combined package is actually quite compelling. But in terms of print, there is pressure from a cost perspective. We are, you know, unfortunately, we've had the cost impact of inflation. We've had the energy crisis. We've got the war in Ukraine. All we have seen happen is costs increasing. And it's becoming more increasingly difficult. And it puts management in a position where they have to make choices around what they can offer the consumer for the price point. So we have become a little bit smaller. But look, I do think the product will there. When I say it's smaller, I think the market will be smaller. I would love to see us remain as a broadsheet. I think that's a key part of our identity. So I would like to see that happen. But the print will be smaller, and really where, you know, growth will come for us is going to be around the whole area of digital.
And being digital, which you have become, and you are, as I mentioned again, a daily, you're putting it out daily, hourly almost, is there's an opportunity there for voice. Is there audio?
Yeah, most definitely. I think where our priorities right now is, you know, is really around ensuring that our product is on a daily basis, ensuring that our readers are getting the most up-to-date information about business in Ireland and what's going on. I think audio and video or multimedia is going to be something we, you know, we have looked at, we will continue to look at. Right now, it's not something that we have focused on. But I do think over the next 2 to 3 years, I think you'll see us to do more in that space.
Business post on TikTok.
Well, we have a TikTok T-shirt, of course.
You may laugh, but it probably is the future, not for business posts, but in general. Like the snippets of information for any output now is getting smaller and shorter. Nobody reads it. Nobody will listen to it unless it's absolute bite size.
Yeah, bite size, it is one of those interesting things. And you know, and I think all platforms, we will review and always be conscious of the role of all platforms. And it's interesting to see at the moment, a lot of publishers are experimenting with WhatsApp, for example, in terms of how they reach their audience. So, you know, all platforms are going to be relevant for us, particularly as we start to think about younger audiences and how younger audiences get introduced to our brand and how our brand becomes part of their news repertoire. So, you know, I'm not a TikTok user, I will be honest.
You will probably, just like me, which I'm not, will become a TikTok user.
I have no doubt. Now that we have a Taoiseach who is particularly keen on TikTok, I think it's something that I'm going to have to get on board with pretty quickly.
Are you going to eat my lunch and others in the podcast area? Are you going to get further into podcasting?
I think we will. I think podcasting is something that we already do. We have Law on Trial, which is
Catherine Sands
and is focused on the legal area and legal community. We have a tech podcast, which we do through our Connected magazine and Charlie Taylor. So, you know, we do see a role for podcasting. I think one of the things about podcasting is that it gets like all things, the quality of the product has to be outstanding. And, you know,
thank you.
Yeah, unfortunately in this show that this is an outstanding show because it's a very crowded space.
Oh, my word, it is, yeah.
Right? It is a crowded space. And when you look at the numbers in terms of listens, you know, crime seems to be the single biggest driver. Sport is another huge driver. And so for, you know, a product and a brand like the Business Post, we have to understand what the opportunity is, what the gap is, and how we're going to fill that in a consistent way. Because, you know, from a news organization like ourselves, we have to be consistent for our reader, for our audience, our listener. So again, that's something that we are constantly looking at as to how we allocate our resources. And I think you'll see more coming from us in the podcast space.
And let me maybe turn it away a wee bit from the Business Post, but still with looking at the Business Post, because they or you are part of the News Brand Ireland organization and you are chair there. Do you all gather once a month or whenever you gather and just cry?
Far from it. As I said at the start, you know, the audience is there. More news is consumed now than ever has been at any point in time.
Sales are going down. I don't want to say it too loudly, but not just down, plummeting. And again, I'm not here to dance on anybody's grave. I just wonder how anything can be turned around.
The market, the publishers are extremely resilient because the product is actually very good. And where you are seeing growth is while print circulation is declining and the revenue from print circulation is declining, digital subscriptions is, I think, you know, growing for people, which I think is a real positive. And indeed, for those who are not in the subscriber model, but yet, you know, are still using websites, they're seeing growth as well in the advertising side. So there is growth there. The single biggest challenge is really two things. Number one, it's ensuring that we get a fair share of advertising that is in the digital world. And that is a constant battle with the likes of the big tech platforms.
How are you going to do that? How are you going to force them?
Well, what's been interesting to see there is that, well, firstly, we have complicated relationships with big tech because we will be both supplier and customer of them. And so, you know, we think that the best way for the relationships to work is on the basis of dialogue and on the basis of negotiation. Has been interesting to see that the EU, and you know, we always got to be conscious, the product here is journalism, and we are living in an era of increasing diverse views, and we are seeing the rise of the right, we are seeing the rise of the left, and we are seeing, really, unfortunately, and a little worryingly, we are seeing that there are some actors who are trying to silence the media. We are seeing some nefarious activities happening. And we've seen it, of course, in a number of countries. And we're starting to see it in Ireland as well, which is a worry. The positive thing out of that, Conal, is that at a European level, there is law already in place. So the EU Copyright Directive, which came in 3 years ago and is now under review by the Irish government, is around ensuring that the publisher's right in relation to copyright is protected, and that the publisher is able to earn a fair share and negotiate with big tech platforms.
How can you do that? You publish a story, say, about some building being knocked down illegally or something, and it's picked up by the Googles and by the all the other ones. How do you get a cent out of them for that?
Well, it comes down to being able to track the copyright. And the starting position is being able to have transparency around the data, transparency around the journey of the user in terms of where they're getting their news from. And that's probably the starting position for that.
Hasn't, and correct me if I'm wrong here, I think California most recently, Canada, they're all trying it, but nobody's actually cracked it.
Not happened yet, but, you know, it's early and the cycle, I think. Canada has brought in some law and we have seen some platforms react negatively to that. California has done exactly the same thing. If you look across Europe, what you're seeing is the emergence of CMOs, central marketing organizations, which are collective bodies of publishers and indeed including radio and TV working together to have a larger negotiating block with the big tech platforms.
News brand about to expand?
Well, we'll see. And, you know, it's certainly one of the things that we are under consideration and we're discussing. Probably Denmark and Holland are the most advanced in that at the moment in terms of CMOs. But like I say, the law is now in place in relation to Article 15 of the EU Copyright Directive to protect publishers' copyright in a digital world. We're seeing more and more legislation coming out of Brussels, the Digital Services Act, the Digital Markets Act. And I think particularly as we see the emergence of AI, I think there's probably a growing awareness that from a legal perspective and a legislative perspective, the boat was missed the first time when the internet first came out. It was too new. We didn't understand it. I think now there's an understanding that we have to get the legal structures and the frameworks in place to protect publishers.
Popping back to the post for a second, are you using AI to write any of the business posts at the moment?
We are not using AI to write any of the business posts at the moment. And certainly,
when will that change?
I don't really know at the moment. I think it's very early in the AI cycle. And certainly, you know, one of the things that's always hugely important is to ensure that our readers understand what they're reading. So, you know, we need to develop policies. We need to advance standards around this. We also have to ensure that we don't have a situation where AI might hallucinate. So these are things that still have to be developed. I think at the moment, my own personal opinion on this is that there's a lot of talk about how AI is revolutionizing workforces. I think there's a lot of experimentation at the moment that will undoubtedly change. But certainly for publishers and for the business post, very, very early days.
My second last question really is just to give you an open mic about the importance of an open, free press to democracy, to our democracy. You said already about, or you mentioned the rise of the bad actors in Ireland. How important, and this is like an open goal for you, how important is the free press to Ireland?
30% of the world live in a free democracy. That's and we are part of that 30%. Yeah. We are lucky insofar as we have two houses of the Oireachtas, a president, we have a judiciary, and we have a free press that are independent of each other and hold each other to account.
And hate each other. In a nice way.
In a nice way. So we are lucky we have it, and it has to be protected at all costs, and we have to ensure that we don't become complacent about that. Certainly from the perspective of news brands, you know, one of the key components to that is we are currently campaigning for the reform of the Defamation Act. You know, we probably live in a situation at the moment where we have a lack of balance in relation to that act. You know, it has been described by various human rights groups and indeed the European Commissioner for Justice as a draconian law. We have some of the most draconian law in that regard. And so, you know, we're calling on the government at the moment to change the act, and we are hopeful we will have that done in the next sitting of the Parliament. So that would, for us, would involve, Conal, that we would see the abolition of juries. We are looking for a serious harms test.
Not the abolition of juries, only in these cases.
In these cases, in defamation cases, thank you.
You're not going
to thank you. These are civil law cases, yes.
No, it's a fair point.
We're not talking criminal law now, it's civil law. Yeah, so the abolition of juries in relation to defamation cases.
What difference would that make?
Well, what it does is it speeds things up, right? So I can say, you know, that if you talk to any publisher, they will still have outstanding defamation cases from 2018, 2019 and 2020. And we're now in 2024.
And hanging over their heads.
Hanging over heads. You know, so by virtue of the fact that it is a civil case heard by a jury, it adds huge amounts of time into things. And indeed, if an individual has been damaged by an article, having an excessive length of time doesn't do the injured party any good whatsoever. So by removing juries, it takes out time. It's a more transparent process in terms of how a decision is reached. And it also crucially reduces cost and probably reduces the risk of outcome in terms of, you know, the variability of how a jury might think about things. We're also looking for a serious harms test. And really what this is around is really to ensure that if somebody's good name has been damaged, and there's a responsibility on editors and on newspapers to ensure that we, you know, protect people's reputations and we do the right thing. But if somebody's reputation has been damaged, or in some cases when it hasn't been damaged and cases are taken, we want to have a serious harms test to ensure that, you know, to go the whole way to the High Court, the cost of a High Court case, that there is actually a case to be answered to. And then the last piece really is back to this piece about protecting our democracy, which is the role of SLAPs. And a SLAP is a strategic lawsuit against public participation. I'm so glad I remembered that. It's a hard acronym. But, you know, really what that is around is individuals or organizations with very deep pockets who are trying to silence the media by using their wealth and their resources to silence the media by through threat of potentially putting them out of business. We've seen, again, thankfully in Ireland, we don't see too much of this. But if you do look across the rest of the world, this type of thing can happen. And so we are pushing the government very hard. I think we are lucky that we have in this current coalition that we have a government that understands the importance of getting this done quickly. And so we're very keen for this to be done in the next sitting of the Dáil.
You're keen. I hope it happens.
So do I. We've been campaigning for a long time.
I'll give you, I think, three goals there that you scored. That was very good. Final question. Who would you hire in a heartbeat?
Who would I hire in a heartbeat? That's a really interesting question. Look, I'm a huge. He's not a huge admirer of the media sometimes, but I am a huge admirer of Michael O'Leary. You know,
so I'm a bit of a, I love
I'm,
him.
I'm a bit of a fanboy, to be honest. You know, I just love the commerciality that he brings to things. A born entrepreneur, he says it as he sees it. You know, he wears his heart on his sleeve. You know, what you see is what you get, and you know, and I think individuals like that are, you know, hugely important to our national well-being as an economy. I think they just make things happen.
And when the history is being updated for when Sean Lamass, TK Whittaker are being lauded, I'm going to laud Michael O'Leary for having opened up the skies for Irish businesses 100%. To get all over the world. And also, and very importantly, our kids to get all over Europe and to become European. So
I remember the days of going to London in the 1980s and spending £450 to try and get a return ticket.
Yep.
Well, some days you still have to pay that, but it has changed.
That is fantastic. Colm O'Reilly. Been a while trying to get you in here, but thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
Thank you.
That Great Business Show.
De Facto, the revolutionary shaving oil, changing the face of shaving. For the smoothest shave of your life, just add water. No more lathering up or cleaning up afterward. Just add a few drops of water and you're ready to go. DeFacto's blend of all natural oils hydrates and protects your skin. No more razor burns or irritation. A spa treatment for your face. Perfect for all skin types and lasts so much longer than traditional foams or gels. DeFacto, a shaving revolution. Just add water. Available from selected pharmacies and from DeFactoShave.com.
That Great Business Show. Winner, highly commended award. Irish Podcast Awards.
Every day on That Great Business Show for me is a school day. I had never heard of Industry 4.0 until PR Stephen Mangan contacted me to see if I would like to chat with an expert about it. And since I don't know what it was, well, I had to say yes. It seems that Industry 4.0 allows for smart manufacturing and the creation of intelligent factories. So what should or could that mean for your business? Connor Carmody is Director of Skillnet Innovation Exchange, part of Skillnet Ireland, that aims to see collaboration between scaling technology companies and large corporates. It sounds like a brains trust for big companies to me, but how does Connor see it? Connor Carmody, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here, and I hope I can live up to that billing that you've just given me there.
I believe that it's actually undersold you, because you are the world's expert on this thing called Industry 4.0. But let us come to that secondly, because we need to find out all about Skillnet. Skillnet, I am familiar with. Who owns, runs, funds Skillnet?
So Skillnet Ireland is a government talent development agency. So funded entirely by government and interesting organization. So they have two models at play. Firstly, they run a number of skill nets. They're individual, regional or niche focused skill nets. And there are 70 of those around the country. And they might be things like a biopharma, or there's a cobotics skill net, and they focus very much cobotics. Yeah. They look at robots and AI and things like that.
That's cobotics.
That's called cobotics.
Okay. I told you, every day, school day.
It's a learning day. So there's 70 of those skill nets around the country. And then separately, Skillnet Ireland has launched a number of national schemes. And those national schemes are trying to follow or to assist in the delivery of government strategy around digital transformation and the green agenda. So there are three national initiatives. There's Mentors Work, there is the Climate Academy, and there's ours.
Don't skip over Mentors Work.
Yes.
Very important to us.
So it's a Skillnet. That is a Skillnet-funded operation, and they're a sponsor of this program for you.
And we love them very much.
And I'm delighted to hear that.
So Mentors Work, then the
Climate Academy, and then the Skillnet Innovation Exchange, the Innovation Exchange, which is us. And I guess that is you. And there's us. We're a team in the Skillnet Innovation Exchange. There's
well,
about 10 of us.
You be the boss.
Well, it's mine. It's all mine, Connell. Yes, indeed. No, we've a really good team. And the Innovation Exchange, I guess, at its heart is trying to solve an age-old problem, which is large corporates are not buying enough, in our view, from SMEs. And those SMEs are not getting the opportunity to sell to large corporates.
And when you say large corporates, are we talking about Intel, Google, or Smurfit Kappa, or CRH? Or where do you see large corporate?
So when we talk about large corporate, we talk about mostly the indigenous Irish corporates and the semi-states. So we have worked and are working with Ryanair, with Glanbia, with Origin Enterprises, with Ishka Éireann, ESB, any of the Irish headquartered companies who have an interest in digital transformation. And what they're looking for are opportunities to transform their own businesses, and they need help to do that. So you think about a large organization probably has a 2-year product development life cycle. It's struggling to find the time to transform, and we help them with that process. So what we ask them to do is come to us with a specific challenge. We take that challenge with them and we position it to our members. Our members get the chance then to talk directly to the corporate. And from that, we start to build out this collaboration between kind of the corporate and the SME. And it's a really structured process, because given that corporates are busy, given that there's a lot going on in their world, we ask them to come with a very specific challenge. We ask them to come with budget. We ask them to come with authority to make a decision and the willingness to deal with an Irish SME. And on the other side for the SMEs, our offer to them is, we'll get you a chance to sit in front of a corporate decision maker and give you the chance to pitch your business to them. And because Skillnet Ireland are a talent development agency, we also accept and understand that SMEs need help in that kind of sales process. They need help in how to pitch and how to sell and how to navigate a sales pipeline. And we structured that learning for them as well. So we upskill the SMEs, we get them in front of the corporates, we bring the corporates to the table, and we've built this collaboration ecosystem.
I'm going to ask you about case studies in a second, but when you are trying to teach, and it's a hugely valuable and important thing, to teach an SME how to pitch, how to sell, and the other parts of that process that you mentioned, who teaches that?
So we do that in a number of different ways. It's a great question, actually, because the nature of learning is changing as we are into the 21st century. And I don't know about you, but I did an MBA back in 2008. That's probably lost its relevance and its currency today. They used to say it lasted for 5 years, probably doesn't anymore. So the nature and the speed of learning is changing as technology is rapidly changing. So we like to deliver our training, our learning in a number of different ways. We believe in experiential, get in a room with us, meet your peers, talk to them, discuss with your peers and build a collaboration. Great way of learning. We also have structured in-person face-to-face classes that one of our team delivers. Maria delivers that for us. And we've mapped that against a sales process, right from how do you identify somebody? How do you identify a target market? How do you get in to pitch to them? How do you manage the sales cycle and how do you understand it?
Is this your team now? Have you got these in-house or are you taking in fellows from UCD or Trinity?
No, we have an expert that we found who works with us to deliver that program. We've designed the program and Maria helps us deliver it. But it's all ours. We've designed it. It's our kind of material. And the third level, we have just launched an online program with the Entrepreneurial Sales Institute. Wonderful guys. And that is around the mindset of selling. So we put you together in a room at level one and we say kind of osmosis, learn. Number two, we put you in class in bite-sized things and we kind of do that. And then we teach you around we enable you to learn around the mindset required to do that. So it's a multi-level way of training.
And SkillNet means that it is free or very close to or?
Well, so everyone pays. So SMEs pay to join our little gang. They pay us €250 a year.
That's doable.
That's very doable. Corporates pay us to come and do challenges. And that depends on the size of the corporate and the number of challenges. And then government funds through Skill in Ireland the rest. But the principle is everybody pays to be part of this ecosystem.
So on to case studies. Tell me some lovely, juicy case studies.
Okay, so when you think about what it is we're trying to do, we're trying to do a couple of things. We're trying to get SMEs in front of corporates to pitch their business. And then we're trying to also build collaborations. So if I take collaborations first, IBM, who you'll be familiar with, IBM are trying to build a partner ecosystem. They have built a partner ecosystem whereby they work with SMEs to jointly develop revenue opportunities. So we've a smashing guy working with us, a fella called Owen Carroll of Decision Analytics. It's a new startup, probably 9 to 12 months old, and it's around understanding data and visualizing data is what he does. And he pitched to IBM, and over the last kind of 6 months, they've worked with him. They like what he's doing. They see the opportunity to collaborate, and he's now considered to be an IBM partner, which is an accreditation that you get. And when you think about that for a young guy, 6 months in business, is now an accredited IBM partner. And we deliver that to him. And if you ask Owen about it, he's exceptionally happy with the opportunity that would bring him. So there are a number of collaborations that are starting to happen like that. And then there are actual deals happening. So to give you an example, there's a company called Digital Workforce that were with us. And Digital Workforce are experts in RPA, robotic process automation. And what that means is how do you simplify back-end processes that companies are doing manually and how do you make that automated? He came on to a pitch with Exertis, which is the technology arm of the DCC group. He pitched them in a proposal. Within 6 weeks, he had agreed a deal with them. And since then, he has expanded in Ireland. He's expanded into the Nordics, and I believe he's expanded into the US. So from that one interaction with us, he has built out, we don't disclose the kind of commercials, but he has built out significant ongoing business across a number of different countries. So that's kind of really interesting when you can put somebody in like that and they can, and then we can bring them in, we can get them the first deal, and then they've got to build and expand themselves, land and expand, as they say themselves, and that's really doing well. And I guess the third example to give you, which is a lovely one, before Christmas, we launched a collaboration with Sport Ireland on Digital for Sport, we call it. And Sport Ireland, who are the funding body for roughly 70 sporting organisations around the country, from the IRFU all the way down to the smaller organisations. And they have at their heart a challenge around transforming sport in Ireland, the administration of sport in Ireland, not sport. We're not the sporting guys. We're the administration of sport in Ireland. And just after Christmas, we did our first challenge with Horse Sport Ireland. And they had a particular complex problem around data cleansing. And one of our companies, MyAgen, a fellow called Teddy McCarthy, pitched to them and within 2 weeks had the deal secured and is now delivering that deal for Horse Sport Ireland. So our pitch to both SMEs and to corporates is around value creation for both sides. To the corporates, if you have a challenge and you would like us to solve it, bring us a challenge. We'll put you in front of our membership. We will curate that challenge. We will manage the process. And to the SMEs, our offer is very simple. We will give you opportunities to pitch to corporates who have been validated that they actually have a problem, and we'll give you the required skilling to help you deliver against that.
Now, I know you're here to give the good news.
Only good news.
But yeah, it can't be all rosy, and I'm going to give you some ideas here. I know how slow SMEs can be to get involved in this kind of stuff. Not that they don't want to. They're busy.
Yeah.
And they feel it's going to cost them an arm and a leg. Yeah. And a bit like some of the tendering process and stuff, they feel that it's a waste of time and. There must be some pushback.
So I wouldn't say there's push. So we've onboarded over 600 SMEs into our program over the last 2 years. I wouldn't say there's pushback. I would say what you're doing is competing with the SMEs. You are competing for mind space in a very busy world. SMEs are busy people. You know that. You've been around the block. So they're very busy people. They've lots going on. There's lots of different challenges. And they've got to carve out some time to attend to a webinar that we might do or a learning that we do.
Well, no, a webinar is not going to take very long. So,
but it's an hour.
Yeah.
You have to prep for it. So yeah, if you're going on a webinar with a corporate, you need to understand who that corporate is. You then need to write a submission after that if you want to pitch for it. So these things take time.
But not an awful, that doesn't sound like an awful lot of time.
No, it's not an awful lot of time. Mm-hmm. But in a busy day where there's only 8 hours for an SME or 10 hours or 12 hours.
If I got the opportunity to do business, say, with Ryanair, I would probably spend some time.
You probably would. You probably would. And that's our pitch. So, but guys are busy. And then there's the kind of the training opportunities.
There's always the number two. Tell the number two to do it.
Yeah. That too. So we don't get pushback, but we, in a crowded world, how do we continue to push our message to the SMEs? To the corporates, it's a different challenge. Corporates are even busier. And for them, how do they decide or how do they say, actually, this is worth our while in the busy world of product development and innovation and all of that sort of stuff? Why should we carve out some time to meet the guys from the Innovation Exchange, then go to the webinar, then meet them after? So again, not pushback, but you're always struggling, as you are and every one of us is, to find time in a busy world.
And are the large corporates, are they just being nice?
When you say, are they just being nice? So let me answer it this way. They, A, believe in what we're doing. They believe it's the right thing to do to support Irish SMEs as we do. I think if you look back over the, we've done probably near 40 challenges over the last 2 years. Some of them have gone nowhere.
Now, what would a challenge mean?
So exactly as I've said, we go to the corporate, we ask them what is the problem they're trying to solve.
Okay.
And they define that. So with Horse Sport Ireland specifically, he said, I need to cleanse X amount of hundreds of thousands of records and I need it done in a structured fashion and I need it done in 2 weeks. So give me that, come and pitch that to my membership. I'll put 50 SMEs on a call with you, pitch that challenge, and somebody there will solve your problem for you.
What kind of ones don't work? As in, what challenges do not work? Have you found a little common thread? Too big, too wide, too deep, too...
So we don't do too broad or too wide, too deep. We say to them, don't, you know, come very, very specific. I guess what doesn't work, without naming any villains, what doesn't work the corporate hasn't fully thought through how will I get this through my organization. And with the best will in the world, comes to the table and then goes back in and meets the organization. And the organization says, no, thanks, we don't want that now. But everyone comes to the table in good faith. I think when the rubber hits the road, there's kind of a bit of pushback internally. That's when they don't work.
So what would you like Irish SMEs listen to this podcast to do? Do you want more of them? Do you want more interaction with them? Do you need their guidance to say what they want or they can offer? What's the magic formula for you?
So I guess the first magic formula is go to theinnovationexchange.ie and sign up. Register with us. Register your interest. We'll talk to you and we'll get you on board.
Registration costs zip.
Costs, well, yeah, if you join up as a member, then it's 250 okay. euro. But come on, look at the website, yeah. give us an expression of interest, and we'd be happy to talk to you. That's the first thing.
And who does the talking? Somebody from your organization gives them a bell and does the chat.
Yeah. Yes, Sean, or one of our guys, or me, any one of us, we can all do that. So that's the first thing, just take an action. Register, come and have a chat with us. The second thing I would say is that if you are going to join, whatever you're joining organization, put the time and effort into it. So put the work in, do the research. The big problem with selling is not understanding your target market, not understanding who you're talking to. Are they ready to buy? Do they have money? Do I know enough about them? Can I navigate an organization? Do I know who's going to actually make the decision? That's the big problem in finding all of that. And that takes a bit of work.
I understand that hugely because I work with somebody who brings people on the customer discovery.
Yeah.
And people don't do it.
No.
How can you possibly try to sell if you don't know that the customer actually wants something?
Correct. So the natural inclination is, and in the movies we see the sales guy, he or she kicks the door in, goes in, rings the bell and the deal is done and everyone. It's not like that at all. There's a navigation of what is it that you want? Who in here is making the decisions? What is the decision process? How does that, can I solve your problem? If you ever want to know, Conal, there's a lovely sales deck. They say it's the best sales deck ever written. I think it was Quora, Q-U-R-A. And they call it the best sales deck ever. And it's about 10 slides. Okay. And I love it so much. It talks about how do you paint a picture of the promised land? What happens if you don't go to the promised land? And how will I help you go on that journey? It's magnificent.
In 10 slides. And that we can all do 10 slides.
We can all do 10 slides. And you can understand you're painting a picture of the future and you're painting a picture of if you don't go with me, your future is going to look pretty grim.
Well, now that is one part of why you're here.
Yeah.
The other part is you're going to give me in just a few minutes a 101 on 4.0. See what I did there? 101.
Nice. All the numbers.
Industry 4.0. What? I never heard of it.
So if you think, and like Industry 4.0 basically means the factory of the future, if you want. So how do factories and manufacturing evolve using things like cloud and other kind of technologies, sensors or robotics to evolve? And it's interesting when you think about the kind of the trends and the discussions. So AI at the moment is the biggest trend that we all have. It's going to either ruin our world or it's going to change our world.
And what's your view?
Well, actually, it's more nuanced than that. So AI is with us already in how you manage your Google searches, how you manage your Netflix searches. And if you think back over the span of time and you think about fire or the internet or any of the big changes in society.
Are you talking about fire as in flames?
Fire, when we brought fire down from the mountain in the first time. So when you think about all those, the wheel, they were suddenly the biggest thing. AI's like that. Over the next while, it'll settle down a bit and we'll realize that it's been with us for a while. It's going to continue to be with us. There's going to be advances in those kind of language models and in voice recognition, and it'll become a part of who we are.
I very often think about the first guy or woman who thought up the wheel.
Yeah.
So I come along and say, hey, Connor, here's the wheel. And you say, never work.
Yeah.
What was the discussion? I'd love to know.
And then what happened after that? So the wheel led to the car, and the car led to the truck, and the truck, and so on and so forth, all from this one guy, person, who brought down the wheel. And so when you think about all those big shifts, and they develop these kind of names and these kind of industry hype around them, it's the evolution of technology that we're seeing. And Industry 4.0 is the same. It's about how will factories be smarter into the future? How will they use sensors and robotics? And how will they make them less manual and more automated? That's kind of broadly what it is.
I'm not expecting you to know the answer to this, but who called it Industry 4.0 or 4.0 or whatever you want?
No idea. I presume there's a working group somewhere that came up with those names.
No, there's some professor somewhere who said
very smart. Yeah, yeah.
So what is the future for that? How will it affect anybody in an SME in Ireland?
Industry 4.0 specifically. Yeah. I think, so if an SME, so from our perspective, from the Innovation Exchange perspective, we will see manufacturing companies coming to us and they will be talking about how will their factories evolve? How will they become more automated? And for the SMEs that we deal with, they will be a part of that. The solution won't be all by itself, but they will be a part of that. So they may very well be able to deliver some data intelligence or some sensors or some cloud computing as part of a solution as we think about these factories of the future.
I'm sure you went to the same type of school that I went to when we were told that the Brits wouldn't allow us to have an industrial revolution. So we skipped that part. I often wondered, did they do us a favour because we skipped into the other ones. Is there an opportunity here for Ireland Inc. to skip one step again to, I won't say beat other people, but just to be ahead of the curve?
Well, I think we have an exceptionally, from the SMEs that I meet, we have an exceptionally well-developed set of SMEs in this country. We have, as you know, most of the FDI companies in here. We are quite advanced, and we do have an opportunity to take leadership in areas like this. And certainly our role in this, in areas like sustainability, in digital transformation, Industry 4.0 is a part of that. But to help our SMEs craft their solutions and get them in front of corporates, that's what we do. But yes, there's an opportunity for us to take a leadership position.
How are you on manufacturing, physical manufacturing of goods? As in, I often wonder, could we do better as a nation?
As I talked to you about the Innovation Exchange, not in our wheelhouse. We're very much around digital transformation and technical, more so than we are in physical manufacturing. So you'll have to get somebody next week to talk to you about that.
Maybe it's my time or whatever, but every time I look at anything physical in the physical infrastructure around, I keep looking at it and said, somebody made that. Somebody had to make it, obviously, but it's not being made in Ireland yet. And I often again think, well, okay, we are tiny, but you obviously have a different notion that there are much better, much more advanced things that Ireland Inc. will be doing.
Well, I wouldn't say better, or I would say different. So my view when we set up the Innovation Exchange was that we would go after digital transformation, which really at its heart is about how do you automate a lot of manual processes. That was kind of our bag. I'm sure somebody somewhere is thinking about how they might do the same for manufacturing, and there probably is a stream of work on manufacturing, just not my bag.
So what's the future for you, for Ireland, for the SkillNet, for the SkillNet and Innovation Exchange?
So I think the Innovation Exchange will continue to grow from strength to strength. So we're only 2 years up. We're heading into our third year.
You are out with your net. Are you getting engagement to the level that you would like it?
More than that.
Oh, good.
We're seeing significant engagement from both corporate and SME. And, you know, when you start something like this, you're going in pitching a promise, as you well know, and there's no real tangible value creation behind it.
Do you use your 10 slides from Quora?
We do. And more. And But over the 2 years, we've proven our methodology. We've proven what it is we're trying to do. And I think when we go to corporates now, it's a much easier sell to say to them, come, because we have those lovely case studies that I talked to you about. We can show the value creation for corporates, which is hugely important. And for the SMEs, our promise is very simple. You'll get a chance to pitch. We'll help you with that pitch.
Very nice. Now, speaking of those case studies, from start, the engagement with you guys to delivering and getting pounds, shillings and pence in return. What are you seeing? Is it months, half a year?
So there's a couple of answers to that. And the first is that the typical corporate product development cycle is 18 months to 2 years.
Okay.
Our fastest deal has been 2 weeks. With 2 to 4 weeks with Niagen Horseport.
Hugely exceptional.
Yeah, but we're very happy with that. I'm very proud of that. We did the Exertis one in 6 weeks. I would say it's probably 3 to 6 months in reality. So we've shortened it down significantly.
That's not bad.
It's not bad at all. We've shortened it significantly because we're doing the work before the corporates come to the table and before the SMEs come to the table. So if we could continue to keep that at around the 6 month mark, I think we're doing a super job.
So a nice company looking to expand and or to diversify. You are made for them, should I say.
We are made, a marriage made in heaven, as I used to say to my wife.
And as you...
She still does. We still do, by the way.
I was going to say, she didn't tell me what she answered. Tell me this about your hire in a heartbeat. Who would you hire in a heartbeat?
So we are all about deals and driving deals and the complexity of deals.
Tell me it's the managing director of deals, because I want to get him on.
No. I think the biggest deal that has been done in these parts over the last 30 years is the Northern Ireland peace process.
Love it.
And I would hire George Mitchell.
Oh, yeah.
And when you think about the structure of the peace agreement, and you think about the strands, and you think about the Mitchell principles, it's actually fantastic. I studied it years ago when I was doing the MBA, and... You know, we had these three strands. How would he deal with the North? How would he deal with the UK? And how would he deal with Ireland? And as he worked his way through, if he found he got stuck in one strand, he'd pause and he'd go around here and go to the other, and then he'd come back around again. And you think about bringing two governments, eight political parties, all together into a kind of a cohesive agreement that changed his island. There's the ultimate deal for me.
And you left out one other gorgeous piece of it, which is that term, creative ambiguity.
I had it. And I was going to say it is such a beautiful phrase.
Love it.
Yeah.
And if
I, such a beautiful phrase.
I'm on a little bit of a trip here of my own, trying to get those SMEs in Northern Ireland to understand what opportunity lies up there for them to be part of the UK, to be part of the EU, to be part of the world, to be part of anything they want. And I have already had, Dan Nugent of Amber Eyewear in here, who told me that he is aware of companies already going to Northern Ireland to set up their distribution centres there for those very reasons. El Dorado is coming to Northern Ireland.
Wow. Yeah. But that lovely phrase, creative ambiguity, and actually having the smarts to be able to say, we don't have to nail everything down. Let's leave a little bit of flex here. Yeah. We'll move across the strands. Yeah. We'll keep a little flex. Anyway, the ultimate deal for me was that. So if you can imagine if you could get Georgia Mitchell, even at 81 or whatever he's now, to come and join your organization, wouldn't that be amazing?
That is a good call. And that is Conor Carmody, director of SkillNet Innovation Exchange. And he wants your call, correct?
Thank you very much. Innovationexchange.ie.
We'll get him and also phone him. He told me he'd take a phone call from you. Thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
Thank you so much.
De Facto, the revolutionary shaving oil, changing the face of shaving. For the smoothest shave of your life, just add water. No more lathering up or cleaning up afterward. Just add a few drops of water and you're ready to go. De Facto's blend of all natural oils hydrates and protects your skin. No more razor burns or irritation. A spa treatment for your face. Perfect for all skin types and lasts so much longer than traditional foams or gels. De Facto, a shaving revolution. Just add water. Available from selected pharmacies and from defactoshave.com.
It's all go, let Chrissy know on thatgreatbusinessshow.com.
And that is it for episode 188 of That Great Business Show. Great business insights and inspiration as always. Regular listeners know that we're true believers in business mentors. So make sure to check out mentorswork.ie to unlock the full potential of your business. It's a fully government-funded mentoring program designed to fuel the growth of your business, no matter the sector, no matter the size. And I am delighted to have heard from a couple of our regulars that they've signed up for the program, having heard about it here. Sign up for email updates at thatgreatbusinessshow.com and we will send you your own personal copy of the podcast. Share us, like us, give us 5-star reviews. It all helps. Advertise with us on thatgreatbusinessshow.com to engage with our incredible audience of entrepreneurs, want-to-be entrepreneurs, business owners, and investors. We record at the Dublin South Podcast Studios, where today's studio engineer is the ever-delightful Alison O'Dwyer. A huge thanks, as always, to her for her professionalism. Later, the dynamic duo of studio manager Peter Rice and post-production engineer Neil Horner ensure we remain the world's best-sounding business podcast. So from me, Conal O'Moran, buchas to you all, agus slán tamall.